There is a podcast that lies between the imagination of two simple-minded earthlings. Travel with these two longtime friends, Jimbo and 80s E, as they attempt to explore the fifth dimension. Follow along with them as they take the key and unlock the door to the vast space between shadow and substance. This podcast is one of trivia, of insight, and of sounds and ideas from one of the greatest television shows ever produced. You are embarking on a timeless journey. There is your signpost up ahead. You are entering the tragedy of cinema's Twilight Zone.
That's why.
The word that Mrs. Bronson is unable to put into the hot, still, sodden air is doomed. Because the people you've just seen have been handed a death sentence. 1 month ago, the Earth suddenly changed its elliptical orbit, and in doing so began to follow a path which gradually, moment by moment, day by day, took it closer to the sun. And all of man's little devices to stir up the air are now no longer luxuries. They happen to be pitiful and panicky keys to survival. The time is 12:05, midnight. There is no more darkness. The place is New York City, and this is the eve of the end. Because even at midnight, it's high noon, the hottest day in history, and you're about to spend it in the Twilight Zone.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Tragedy of Cinema podcast, the Twilight Zone series. I'm your host, Jimbo.
And I'm your co-host, 80s E.
80s, welcome back to the fifth dimension.
Yes, sir.
So, Eric, as great as last episode was, this one, not so much. The only thing that saves this episode is the hot girl sweating.
Okay.
Yeah, very beautiful. But I have a question for you right off the get-go. Are you ready?
Sure, I got one for you, but go ahead.
Eric.
Yeah.
This episode shows what would happen if the Earth went off of its axis either towards the sun to burn or away from the sun to freeze to death.
I think we have the exact same question.
Eric, which one would you rather do? Would you rather go closer to the sun where you just constantly get hotter and hotter every day, or would you like to go further and further where you eventually freeze to death? Because you came over here to record in the middle of winter one time, and you almost didn't make it through because
as bad as that was, I'm going to take freezing to death over burning up. I've got some notations at the end. We'll talk about that later. But I'm gonna pick freeze to death. What about you?
I'll definitely freeze to death.
Yeah,
I mean I've got enough flubber on me to last longer than you, so it's okay.
I just do not handle at all.
Eric, I gotta call it to work again. It's just too hot. Eric, it's only 72 degrees outside.
I got some stories for you coming up. Just hang on to your hat.
Let me ask you this. I know you're gonna laugh at this. Eric, you work in a pretty strenuous
hot
environment.
Box.
Yes. You ever had the monkey butt? You ever had the old sweltering underwear? You know, the monkey crawl when you walk out to your car?
I plead the fifth.
Oh, man. That monkey butt powder is a lifesaver, let me tell you, because those welts are real, boys.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and get into this.
Let's jump into the Midnight Sun, the season 3, episode number 10. And this episode was directed by Anton Leder. And it was, of course, written by Rod Serling. And I've got some featured music by Nathan Van Cleave. And the music is most notable probably at the very beginning. There's not any dialogue when Norma's in her apartment and it's sort of building. But Nathan Van Cleave for the featured music. The original air date for this particular Twilight Zone episode was November the 17th, 1961. And this brings us to our beloved segment entitled
On This Day in History.
All right, so on this day in TV and film history for November the 17th, 1961, I'll defer to Jimbo. Breakfast at Tiffany's, if I can get it out, the number one movie. Let's go to 1968, a few years later, and Beatle George Harrison makes a cameo appearance on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. You ever catch any Smothers Brothers?
A long time ago, man.
Doesn't one guy play he was like a yo-yo master, and then the other, I don't know.
It's been a long time.
Tom Smothers.
Dick Smothers, I think.
Tom and Dick Smothers, yeah, whatever. I remember watching some of it as a kid, maybe at my grandmother's or something, but There you go, George Harrison.
What about Lawrence Welk? Did you?
Yeah, a little, maybe. Saturday night. It was. I think they preferred Hee Haw over Lawrence Welk.
So. I searched the world over and thought I found true love. You had another.
1970.
Oh, I sent you a perfectly. You didn't give me a.
You were gone. 1970, Elton John performs a live studio concert broadcast for WABC in New York City, later released on his album 11-17-70.
You an Elton John fan there, Eric?
I mean, he's all right, I guess. He's got some hits, but I'm not necessarily a fan, per se. 1979, Salem's Lot, American two-part miniseries awesome. Based on the horror novel of the same name by Stephen King, premieres
awesome
in the United States.
Movie.
That was November 17th, 1979.
Did you ever see it?
Nope. You're just swinging and missing all day.
Okay. Honestly, you guys, I'm going to be honest with you. Our fifth year anniversary show is coming up. And
you
Eric.
Do this now?
No. I'm just going to say Eric has never watched The Predator.
I know. ADZ. How can I have a name?
How can
like
you have
ADZ?
A name? And never seen The Predator, one of Arnold's
I'll
greatest?
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you
no,
why.
No, we'll save it for okay. your interview.
All right. Well, so yes, to my shame, I guess, I've never seen The Predator until a couple of days ago.
When I made him watch it.
All right. Back to November 17th, 1992. The show Dateline NBC airs. They aired a demonstration to show General Motors trucks blowing up on impact, and it was later revealed that NBC rigged the test. So, nothing like shock value to get ratings.
Like, yeah.
So, that happened in 1992. Speaking of Predator, November 17th, 2003, Arnold Schwarzenegger is sworn in as California governor. That happened on November 17th, 2003. And finally... second to finally, November 17th, 2008, Twilight, based on the book by Stephanie Meyer, directed by Catherine Hardwicke, starring Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, premieres in Los Angeles in 2008.
Man,
fan of the Twilight?
Man, I hate the Twilight. My vampires don't sparkle. Did you have to watch them?
No, I think my
with two daughters. I was gonna say
they
I
read
know
the books. They may have seen the movies, but no, I was not subjected to that torture. All right, famous birthdays for November 17th. We got two. Rachel McAdams.
Hottie.
Yep. And Martin Scorsese.
Not so hottie.
Oldie. Hottie and oldie.
Oldie but goodie.
All right. So the total production cost for this episode is $47,532.20. So a little under cost from our last episode. 2 dates of rehearsal, August 7th and 8th of 1961, and dates of filming were August 9, 10, and 11 of 1961. And I do have a little notation on filming dates. On September the 12th of 1961, additional insert shots were filmed for this episode, which included the thermometer against the window and snow, the heat scenes when the thermometer reached 110, 112, and 118 degrees, and then bursting the thermometer, so all those little clips were added in post-production.
Do you remember when we were younger, you remember the thermometers that had...
Oh, yeah,
you
take, the mercury.
Do you remember they say, don't break it, the mercury! Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real, that was,
dangerous,
was a real
though.
Thing,
we
man.
We found out later that it was that wasn't something to play with. So, Jimbo, give us a little bit of this. Well, give us all of the cast, if you will, and then I'll give a synopsis plot for
all
this
right.
episode.
Here we go. The beautiful Lois Nettleton.
Beauty played, queen. Wiener.
Beautiful. She played Norma. She was in the TV show. Do you remember the TV show, Eric, In the Heat of the Night?
Yes.
She played
Carol O'Connor?
Yeah. She played Joan St. John.
Really?
In 22 episodes. Yep. I'm going to have to go back and watch that because I liked Big Bubba. Remember Bubba? Mm-hmm. I remember him. He was cool. But she was also did a lot of the voice work as for the House of Villains, Disney's House of M and all that. She was the voice of Maleficent in the cartoons. Then you had Betty Gard.
Betty Gard.
She played Mrs. Bronson. She was in a movie called Caged in 1950. Eric, let me ask you a question.
She should have been caged in this episode.
You,
she was
do you think,
screwing up all over the place.
You think Betty Gard was a silent actress?
I don't know, Jimbo. Why don't you Google that up and see if she was in the silent film era?
Eric said he was going to spring it on me, so I figured I might as well just try to throw it. I like how we're having fun in this episode, because after last episode, we need an episode like this.
Last episode was heavy.
Tom Reese, he played the intruder. He was in a movie called The Fantasy Point. And I'm going to say this right here. I think that Charles Bronson should have played this guy instead of this guy. I think he would have been perfect. Especially when he comes in with no shirt on, with that little
thing. Hold on, man. It's 120 degrees and the guy's got a sport coat on. What's up with that? With no shirt and a handkerchief.
That's what I'm saying. It reminded me of Charles Bronson in the first episode, too. Yeah. Remember when he
What's with that? Come on, dude.
Oh, man. Then you had Jason Wingreen. He played Mr. Schuster. He was in Archie Bunker's Place in 1979. Eric, he was in that great movie Airplane, where he played Dr. Brody. Hilarious. And yes, I did not know this now, but now I do. He was in Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, where he voiced Bubba Fett.
Oh, really?
I thought that was very interesting. Yeah. Then you had Junie Ellis, who played Mrs. Schuster as June Ellis. She was in Karina, Karina. I believe that's Whoopi Goldberg with the little girl in it. In 1994. Then you had William Keane. He was the doctor. Not much to say about him. And then there was, two people that were in the episode, but weren't in the episode, right? So you had Ned Glass, who he was the fridge repairman. He was in a movie called Strayed in 1963. And you had John McLeam. He was a cop. He was in First Blood in 1992, where he played Orville. And yes, we have Rod Serling rounding out the cast.
All right. Plot in this episode. In a world that is getting ever nearer to the sun, people are trying to find a way to deal with the extreme heat. Most people have gone north with Norma and Mrs. Bronson, the only two people left in their apartment building. There is little or no infrastructure remaining, and water is one commodity that is very much in demand, as it would be. They panic when an intruder breaks into Norma's apartment and holds them at least for a few moments at gunpoint. All is not as it seems, however. All right, so Act 1, we open with Norma panting and painting because it's hot.
Eric was panting while she was painting.
Yeah,
she's in her panties.
She's painting a picture. She's an artist. And we cut to, the beaming sun coming through the window of this high-rise apartment building in New York City. We'll come to find out it's in New York City, with the shots of the skyline outside, right? And then there's a cut to the thermometer in the window, and it reads in excess of 110 degrees. And she's still wearing, a heavy painting, smock.
Yeah. And her hair, it's not really that hot yet. Her hair still looks all fine.
And it looks like she has a little window air conditioner that the electricity is on right now, and it's blowing, so it's probably not as bad yet. The sun is so hot, though, that she sharply turns away when she looks at it, and then Norma pulls down the shade. And then here for the next 2 or 3 minutes, the intense music, like I said earlier, is building, and she, ties her hair back, thinks about smoking a cigarette, and then she decides to go to the refrigerator and get a carefully poured glass of water, right?
Yep.
That becomes that water commodity thing. And just by way of personal side note, this water glass jug in the refrigerator, it reminds me of my grandmother. My grandmother used to keep an exact, water pitcher, glass water pitcher in her refrigerator.
I think mine always had one that had the, or maybe it's my in-laws, they always had they lived on a farm, so they always had one of them, ones they would, the purifier thing that would go through. And then my grandparents had the thing on their sink.
Oh, really? That
took the sediments and stuff out.
Well, your grandparents were far ahead of mine, because they just literally put the water from the tap in a container and put it in the refrigerator. But anyway, I digress. So Norma hears a knock at the door, and there's a little girl outside, Susie, and she looks up with the most pitiful expression, right? Just goes straight to your heart.
And she wasn't even in the cast list.
Oh, really? I think I've got a little trivia on her maybe later on. So her father, he quickly reprimands her and says, "Susie, don't take the lady's water." And Norma replies, "It's all right, Mr. Schuster. I've got plenty." And Mr. Schuster, he grumbles, "Nobody's got plenty." So right from the beginning, we've established it's extremely hot and water is very scarce.
Let me ask you a question. If this is in New York City, why couldn't they just go down to the ocean, fill up buckets of water, and come back and boil it? Well, they may not even have to boil it.
Already boiling.
Right. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Isn't there a line in there that it's boiling soup or... I think the radio announcer.
Well, he says you cook eggs and stuff like that.
Yeah, cook eggs on the
sidewalk
and boil soup in the ocean or something like that. So, right from the beginning, again, we've established that super hot and water's extremely scarce. So, here we are introduced to Mrs. Bronson. She enters the hall when she hears Mr. Schuster's voice. And we come to find out that the Schusters are going to try to make it to Toronto because Mr. Schuster has like a cousin that lives up there. And gasoline is also, you know, very hard to come by. He's only gotten 12 gallons of gas in his car, but he thinks that that will get him to at least Syracuse, New York. And it seems like he's trying to persuade Mrs. Bronson to go with him because she's a little bit older. I think she's wearing like a wedding ring, but we never meet her husband throughout the... maybe he's deceased and doesn't really say. The Schusters are going to... you know, go to Syracuse. He says, "You guys have been great neighbors. We're going to miss you." And then, of course, Mrs. Bronson wishes the Schusters a safe trip and good luck. And she returns and turns to Norma and she says, "And now we are two. And the building is empty now." And she asks Norma, "Aren't you going to leave?" And here we get and then Norma walks back to like in her apartment and we get a little hint of the Twilight Zone twist that's coming as Norma describes her crazy thought. And I just wondered if everyone caught that. As she's walking in, she talks about like a feeling that she has and describes all of the events that are happening in the episode. So we kind of get, she describes like the cool night and the people on the street and all of those things. So we kind of get a little inkling of the twist that's coming. Actually, would you consider this a double twist? I think so, because it's all a dream and she has a temperature, but I won't. Would you give it a double twist?
Maybe.
Okay. Food for thought. So Mrs. Bronson... clues us in when she tells us there's a scientist. She loves her scientists on the radio. She says there's a scientist on the radio, and he said that it'll get a lot hotter, more each day, and that we're moving close. The closer we move to the sun, and that's why we're. And then perfectly timed, Rod takes the baton from here. In his introduction, he describes the imminent doom that's coming for the entire Earth. Right? They're just going to keep moving closer and closer to the sun.
You know, I can't take Rod seriously in this with that fake background and the landscape. It's just a painting.
Yeah. I thought the dovetailing, though, was really cool, how he finishes Mrs. Bronson's sentence, if you will. And don't we go to commercial after Rod's introduction? Yeah, we do. And then we come to Act 2. Sorry, I needed a drink of water there.
The sun's so close to the Earth that I had to take a swig of water.
Make sure you have a cool drink by your side when you watch this episode, too. We get a title shot again with rolling credits. I like that instead of the still shot. So Norma's at her front door, and she's got a bag of groceries, and she's trying to get in. And then all the credits and the title shot roll in Act 2. And Norma has come back from the grocery store, and she says just a handful of people were taking whatever they could grab. And we go into the apartment, and Mrs. Bronson, she's gotten some fruit juice, right? And Mrs. Bronson says, "Oh, can we drink some of it now?" And Norma says, "Of course." And Mrs. Bronson goes to the drawer and scrambles for a can opener, and she feverishly grabs for the can of fruit juice and tries to open it and drops it.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, on the ground. And she's embarrassed, and she says she's acting like an animal. But Norma is very kind-hearted and like reassures her that she's just acting like a normal but scared woman, right?
I would have just locked my door and not let that lady anywhere near me, man. I don't care if she was the last woman on Earth.
Yeah, well, That's one of the endearing parts to me for the episode. I'll talk about it later. But a news bulletin comes on the radio from the police force as they're sitting drinking. Well, they drink the fruit juice and they say, here's spit in your eye or whatever the expression. Here's looking at you, kid. I don't know. And they drink their fruit juice. Grapefruit juice, I think it is. And the news bulletin comes on the radio from the police force warning the citizens to lock their doors and protect themselves from, quote, cranks and looters with any weapon they have available. Can you even have a gun in New York City now? And now, back then, it's way different. Not. I mean, obviously.
Well, you may not be able to, but criminals are always going to find a way there, Eric.
Yeah. Point well taken. So the announcer goes on to give the weather report. He says it's hot. And then he goes off script, right? And then he's promptly cut off and replaced by music. That was kind of funny. The announcer's like, well, who cares? We're all going to die anyway. He's like,
yeah,
not supposed to scare the people. And
what is it he says? He gives the weather, I think. And then he's like, and we'll give the weather for tomorrow. And tomorrow it's going to be hot.
And more hot. Yeah.
And I think they, he's like... He's like, who are they kidding? You know, you can fry eggs out on the thing and heat up soup in the ocean. And he's like, what? I'm not supposed to be saying this stuff? What do you mean, panic? Who's left to panic?
Yeah, there's nobody left here.
He says, ladies and gentlemen, I'm told that I'm departing from the script.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, so. I like that part. It was kind of a good little part there. And as the ladies drink their grapefruit juice, then all of a sudden the power goes out. And Mrs. Positivity says, it stays on a shorter time each day, Norma. What if it just cuts off and doesn't come back on again? This place would be like an oven. As hot as it is, it could be so much worse. I'm like, thanks, lady.
Man, she just...
She's right, but...
She's the worst.
Mrs. Bronson requests that Norma paint something cool today, something pastoral. Right? Because Norma's drawing... She's painting... portraits of the sun.
Oh, can I ask why?
I don't know. She's just obsessed with
she lost it.
Her personal experience maybe has just overwhelmed her.
But it's every day. It's just that's the her sun. Only you know, I guess it's coming closer and closer. I mean, you could have painted a portrait of your neighbor going crazy, dropping the canned juice or whatever.
Yeah. So she wants something pastoral. She loses it. Well, we'll come to a scene where...
it's the worst.
Yeah, Bronson. She loses it and dramatically throws the sun painting on the floor and starts pounding on it and says, don't paint the sun anymore! Don't paint the sun
paint
anymore!
Paint something cool and refreshing!
We've all been there. We've had a few days.
I don't think I've ever beaten a painting on the ground, Eric.
I've been, at work. There's been some rough, rough days. I think your building might be a little more temperature controlled than mine.
Now, baby. You get in them containers, it gets really hot.
I got a couple stories for you. Just hold on.
We're going to put them on the... Are they going to be on air?
I got them in my notes here. Right. So at the end of the dramatic paint pounding, if you will, we close the scene and then we come to Act 3. She's looking at it right now as we're watching along. I'll go ahead and jump into Act 3, though. Norma's about to faint from the heat. They're separated. Norma and Mrs. Bronson are in their separate apartments again. And she's about to faint from the heat. And then she goes over to the windowsill and she burns her hand on the windowsill.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And the thermometer is above 120 degrees at this point. But man, Norma's such a nice person. She goes across the hall and checks on Mrs. Bronson.
I would have went to another room upstairs or something, locked the door like I disappeared. I left too.
Yeah, so she goes and checks on Mrs. Bronson and both of them hear something on the roof of the building, and then Mrs. Bronson can't remember if she locked the roof door or not. That heat is really starting to fry her brain. She's like, I locked it. No, I didn't. No, I think I did. And it's like, lady, two ladies, you know, by themselves, it's not a safe place to be, and we're going to see why here in a minute. Mrs. Bronson, you know, she can't remember, but they both hear clanking and moving around on the roof, so they both run into Norma's apartment and lock the door. And they hear the doorknobs rattling and a man's voice from the outside pleading with them to let him in. Right? Come on, honey, I ain't got all day.
Yeah, well,
like, that's what he says from the outside of the door.
Here's my thing. Okay. We've just established that she just burned her hand trying to touch the windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's coming in from the roof, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How would he get on the roof, Eric? Fire escape?
A ladder fire escape, maybe?
What's a fire escape made of?
Are you driving at a metal ladder
metal,
with burnt his
hands? Of course!
And he's way up high?
Of course! And why wouldn't he just go through the front door of the apartment complex?
Maybe it's locked.
Bust the window!
Hmm.
Why are you going to climb up a metal ladder to get to the roof?
Don't know.
That's a good question. That's why I never understood about this.
Don't know.
It's ridiculous.
So the doorknob, you know, like I said, is rattling. We're back, and Norma runs and gets a gun from the drawer and says, "Do you hear that? That was a gun. Get out of here. Down the stairs and out the front door. Leave us alone."
Pulled out the old Charles Bronson gun.
Yeah, man. That was
Dirty Harry. Go ahead, punk. Yeah, make my day.
That was a big gun, for sure. But I think the heat gets the best of Mrs. Bronson because, thinking that the man has gone, foolishly, she unlocks the apartment door before Norma sees him on the street. Dun, dun, dun. What a dummy. So the guy, of course, bursts through the door.
This episode's now, terrible, man.
Now they got to tangle with the sport coat guy. So Norma, she raises the gun, but the intruder, of course, he wrestles it away from her. He's a big, burly dude. And then he goes, and this really got to me. He goes immediately to her fridge, drinks all the last of their water, but that's not enough. He has to smash the bottle on the ground to where they can't fill it up again. What's wrong with this clown? What a dirtbag, right? That made me mad when he smashed that glass bottle on the ground.
Well, I mean, I could say, you know, you could go out to California or Seattle somewhere and just go in and steal, as long as you don't steal over $750 worth of stuff, you know, and just leave and you don't get prosecuted for it. I mean, what is that? But that's another episode.
So, notice that it's...
Why didn't she just shoot him?
Again, it's 120 degrees outside, as we've mentioned before, and this man is wearing a sport coat with no shirt. The only explanation I can possibly give that he's like a businessman. Okay, well, let's get to the other portion of this. And I think this is a couple points down. He looks at the paintings. He says they're real good and that his wife used to paint. And that his wife couldn't take the heat and that he tried to keep her cool. So you start to have a little sympathy for this guy once he just tells you his backstory. And that the baby didn't live more than an hour. So here's a question for you. Are we to deduce that she was pregnant and had just given birth, and that the baby died within hours of the birth because it was too hot and the mother was...
I mean, either way, I mean, you say baby, I would say anywhere up to 2 years old. I would still consider them babies.
I can see this, his wife is pregnant, he can't go to a hospital, they have to do a home delivery, there's not enough water to keep her cool. She doesn't last very long. He calls her like she's little, tiny, and frail or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
she couldn't take the heat.
And that
just makes me not like him even more. Knowing that his wife just died, two helpless ladies, he drinks all their water.
Yeah. What I do like ever since he entered the picture is like the hottest it's been. And he goes over there to like the shade, you know, and pulls it down and up, and the sweat's just flinging off of him. You know what I mean? I think the sweating in this is pretty amazing.
Yeah, so he, you know, you come to, the intruder immediately, though, is like, he's remorseful for his actions, and then he tries to apologize. He says, "I'm a decent man, I'm just off my rocker," and he asks for forgiveness from the ladies, and as he exits the apartment, Norma...
You got Norma over there on the, cowering over on the little...
Oh, yeah, Mrs. Bronson's got her head buried.
Yeah, not Norma,
the,
yeah, Mrs. Bronson.
Yeah, just hiding. But Norma shakes her head, yes, like, we forgive you, we understand, you've gone through a lot, which makes me like Norma even more, that she forgives this intruder. So Mrs. Bronson raises her head out of the chair and sees the newest painting of a waterfall. Eventually she turns and Mrs. Bronson starts to crack as she describes the... This got a little bit weird.
Dude, she's over there, like, bathing in the window.
And I'm like, swimming in it.
Yeah. And she's, like, rubbing her body. I'm like, you know, in Ithaca, New York, and we used to go, it's just like this. And I'm like, this lady has lost her marbles.
It's a little unsettling, to put it mildly. Yeah, that whole scene. And she thrusts herself into the window, which Norma just burned herself, but she's like hugging the window. And because she's complete, like you said, she gets completely gone. And then she eventually falls back and passes out or dies. I don't know. She might have.
It's kind of like in a crucifix, you know, like.
Yeah. Very dramatic.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, would you expect anything different from her?
No. But Norma, she tends to her and begins hugging her and her rocking her back and forth. And then the camera pans up to the painting. Now, these are cool close-up shots of first on Norma's face. And then the sun beating down on the paintings, and then the paintings begin to melt. And then we get another good shot of the thermometer, and it breaks. The red shoots up through the top. And
you say the red. How do you know it was red, Eric? It's a black and white movie.
That's a good question. Because they're red when I've seen them in real life.
Oh.
Oh, well.
But not in the movies. Yeah.
So then there's a cool shot of Norma's scream, her last scream. Ah!
Yeah.
And then she dies or passes out or whatever.
Kills over
and
right next to Mrs.
Yeah, then the scene shifts.
It's so terrible.
The scene shifts, and then now we see snow in the window, and the same thermometer reads 10 degrees. And then a doctor is tending to what we find out is Norma's. She just has a fever, and this has all been like a dream. And, you know, I don't know. She's in some kind of medical distress. And then Mrs. Bronson assures her that she's going to be all right. And she wants the doctor to confirm her diagnosis. And she kind of looks at him. And the doctor, this is the great look. This is one good highlight. The doctor's precarious look of uncertainty, like on his face. He's like, yeah, she's going to be all right. But he knows something else underneath the surface is going on. And then we get, that's just another little tiny hit at the twist. He says the medicine's all gone, but that's not the worst of their worries, right? And then here comes the twist. Twist alert. Mrs. Bronson and her radio news of doom. Once again, her news of radio scientists. She's there to give all the information. She says, there was a scientist on the radio this morning, and he was trying to explain what happened, how the Earth had changed its orbit and was starting to move away from the sun, and that within 1, 2, or maybe 3 weeks at the most, that there wouldn't be any sun anymore and that we would all freeze. So now we've gone to the opposite end of the spectrum, and that's the grandiose twist.
Well, and what, when it first comes here, Mrs. Bronson goes to the window, and she shoves like newspaper under the windowsill or something.
Yeah, to sort of.
Was the window open?
I think just draft, you know, how like sometimes windows can be drafty. I've got one in my house that.
Yeah, Eric, you ever had a feverish dream?
Man, that's a good question. I probably have, but it would take me a minute to recall.
I remember I was so sick one time. I still lived with my parents at the time, and I was so sick. And you know, you're going to laugh, but look at him, he's ready. I was laying there, you know, and you're so sick, you know, and you're sweating. And I remember Captain Janeway in the Star Trek Voyager, we were like on the bridge or whatever, and we went to like hyperspeed or you know light speed or whatever, and we zoomed off. And then I'd wake up in a pool of sweat, you know. And then I was so sick I couldn't get out of bed, and I just drift back. And we'd go to the exact same thing where she and then like the room spinning and all. You know, so it was the same reoccurring thing that whole hours.
You just
I'd wake up
and then
yeah, when we hit light speed, I'd wake back up and then I'd you know you oh that was interesting.
Yeah.
You go back down and it's the same thing the entire 12 hours or whatever it was. But it'd be you know you ever woke up in a pool of sweat?
I have
you know?
That. I do remember that once after an illness that I had experienced. Night sweats or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I thought I knew what they were, but literally.
The whole mattress and everything is just
so
drenched.
I'm like, what happened? So we, after our twist, going back to our episode, Norma recounts the events of her terrible dream, kind of like Jimbo did, the Starship Enterprise. Or Voyager.
Voyager, let's get it right.
I'm sorry, I'm not a Star Trekkie here.
Of course
not. So she recounted the events of the midnight sun, and she says, it's wonderful to have darkness and cool, because, you know, in her dream she was burning up. And then Mrs. Bronson's like, oh, yes, it's wonderful, and sort of looks sheepishly up at the camera.
And I like how it does fade to black. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, she can't bring herself to tell her, like, no, you're still in a nightmare. The nightmare is just
different,
going the different way. Yeah, so that pretty much concludes the episode. Jimbo trivia off the top. You want to talk about those deleted scenes, or what do you got for me?
I have absolutely nothing except she looks hotter the sweatier she gets, and her hair is unkempt. I think Norma's somebody I would date.
Good to know.
Yeah, just let you know. That's all I took from this. Now, Mrs. Bronson, that might be more your style, Eric.
Well, not really a silent era film fan, but maybe.
If she was a silent film era, maybe she should have stayed silent in this episode.
We need to find out if that's true or not.
Let me look it up for you, Eric.
So let's talk about the two scenes that were cut on the cutting room floor. Two scenes filmed for this episode ended up on the cutting room floor due to time restraints. Immediately after the neighbor leaves with his wife and son, it's a son, but it's a daughter in the episode. That doesn't seem right. Mrs. Bronson then tells Norma that they're the only two left in the building. A repairman, like a refrigerator repairman, enters the hallway to inform Mrs. Bronson that he has finished fixing her refrigerator in the apartment. And then he asks her to pay in cash. You got something already?
Well, that was Betty Grable. Betty Grable was a pinup for World War II. Let me look at the Betty Guard.
Okay, let's talk about the other deleted scene. It involved a policeman who arrived wearing his shirt unbuttoned all the way down, and his sleeves been cut off, and they were ragged and uneven at the elbows. He asks the ladies if they are the only ones in the building, and then he explains that the police have been trying to get a public announcement through to everyone left in the city that there will no longer be a police force tomorrow and that they are disbanding. That's kind of scary. He orders them to keep their doors locked, and every wild man and crank and maniac around will be roaming the streets. And then he goes on with more dialogue. And again, these scenes were cut due to time. They probably would have added a little more fullness to the episode, maybe. I'm not sure. But you got something?
You ready?
Yep. Shoot.
All right, it's for my IMDb, baby. Betty Gard was a versatile actress who began in show business after winning a playwriting competition at high school.
Oh.
Joining actors
in the theater.
Equity in 1922, she became a noted performer on stage in Boston and Philadelphia, eventually making her debut on Broadway in 1925. Betty, at least early in her profession, was particularly noted for her penchant for comedy, often receiving high praise from the critics. During the 1930s and the 40s, she became a prolific radio actress, at the same time maintaining a busy career in the theater. In addition to voice acting, she also produced and directed her own drama series on CBS entitled Another Chance. She starred in and directed the soap opera My Son and I in 1939. Additionally, she featured on Eddie Cantor's show in specials for Orson Welles and in the radio anthology series Theater Guild on the Air. Her film and television roles became more frequent from the late 1940s. She was effectively reprehensible as Wanda Skutnik, the key witness who sends innocent Richard Conte to jail in the gripping drama called Northside 777 in 1948. Another tough role was her prison inmate Kitty Stark in Caged in 1950, a minor film noir. Her most famous role was as Aunt Eller in the original Broadway production of Oklahoma in 1943. Among many guest starring roles on the small screen, her standout performances has to be that of Lois Nettleton's overwrought landlady, Mrs. Bronson, in the seminal The Twilight Zone episode, The Midnight Sun.
There you go.
So, no, she wasn't a silent film actress.
Lois Nettleton was paid $1,250 for her appearance as Norma Smith. According to paperwork dated August 3rd, 1961, the name Norma Smith was supposed to be changed to Norma Forrest. But this never happened. Nettleton received first class round-trip air transportation from New York to Los Angeles for her, you know, time on the show. She says, "I came out from New York for The Twilight Zone, and I loved every minute of it. The lamps that were the lamps on the set created the heat to help create the illusion. That's all it was, an illusion. The heat in the studio wasn't enough. Someone was spraying water on our faces between shots. Anton Leder, the director, made us feel comfortable on the set. He was the kind of director all method actors longed for on television."
I hope he had a super soaker, which is like, spray him on.
Yeah. To create the melting painting effect, this is something that both of us enjoyed, I think, the painting was reproduced in wax and mounted onto a hot plate. So that's mm-hmm. how they created the melting effect. Mr. and Mrs. Schuster's little girl in this episode was selected from a casting call that gave the casting director six different girls to choose from, all about 4 years of age. And one was selected because she had the most pleading face, if you will. So she looked the most
pitiful. I'm sorry, you look homely. We're going to take you as that one.
Exactly. Mrs. Bronson says the painting reminds her of the tallest waterfall in Ithaca, New York, probably Tahawknock Falls. I don't know how to pronounce that. But anyway, it's a falls in upstate New York, about 11 miles north of Ithaca, where Rod Serling lived and where he taught at Ithaca College for several years. So there's a falls in Ithaca, New York. Serling may have gotten the idea for the title, not the plot, from a letter he received on New Year's Eve 1959 from Jack Cooney of CBS, who described the six-year-old son's first attempt at stage direction in New Haven, Connecticut, a play entitled Midnight Sun. Whether the title was a coincidence or shades of a faded memory, it fits well with the subject matter for the episode. I got three goofs, and then Jimbo, you can tell me your thoughts, feelings, and observations, questions, and so forth. The goofs are as follows. The Earth moving closer to the sun would raise the temperature, but it would not create a midnight sun. That would require a change in rotation, either stopping it or drastically changing its axis. So, right, you think about right now, like in Alaska, have you heard, Jimbo, like there are certain times of the year in Alaska where it's daylight mm-hmm. almost all the time.
6 weeks or whatever.
So it has to do with the Earth's rotation on its axis, not whether, you know, not its distance from the sun, which I think it's like 98 or 93 million miles the Earth is from the sun. The plot of this story is that the temperature is unbearably hot. However, the man who breaks into the apartment is wearing a sports coat. We talked about that already, how crazy that is. When the intruder opens Norma's fridge to get water, the light is on in the fridge despite the power being off. I really couldn't notice that in black and white. I went back and tried to look. I'm sure if you looked really intently, you could see that goof. But Jimbo, what are your thoughts? What are your deep feelings?
Well, I'm not going to give you my freezing thoughts. I'm going to give you my fire review. Terrible. Like I said, the only saving grace of this is Norma Lois Nettleton. She was a beauty. Even if you watch her actions, like when the guy's at the door, her eyes are just wandering. I think she portrayed very good. Mrs. Bronson, I think she was a great actress from what we've read, maybe a radio actress, theater, but I don't know, maybe it was the way the script was written, that it was. She probably did the best she could with what she had, how it was written, but she was over the top.
Is the twist a saving grace for you, though? I know you love your twist.
I do love twist. Not really. You know, I don't know who in the world would rate this one above the one we just watched, the Death's Head review last week, the Death's Head Revisited. This one is average at best. I'd probably give this a 6, if I'm being honest. It's just, it's slow. It takes place in an apartment. And I'm sorry, Norma, but your paintings weren't even that good.
Wow.
Yeah, our toast would agree. If my dad can paint something better than that, then there's a problem.
It's hot, though. She's under distress. She's
then kidding. Paint something besides the stupid sun. Paint your refrigerator. Paint your cigarette. Paint your gun. Paint Norma. Or
paint yourself.
Paint Mrs. Bronson. Self yeah. Portrait. Paint yourself like Da Vinci. As Mona Lisa. But yeah, it's not very good. I don't think this will be in my top 10 at the end of the year. Probably not. If not, that means the rest of the season's really bad, and I had to choose one. So that's my feelings.
All right, what's your prop piece?
Prop piece I am taking. I would say Norma, but let me go with, Probably the thermometer.
Okay. Well, on a positive note, I really was impressed in this episode by the way the two ladies looked after each other. They were both unwilling to leave the other side in times of trouble, even death. That is the true essence of friendship and being a good neighbor. So that's the one good positive that I did take
out
of it.
I know you know that if somebody was there and they came banging on it, you would have shot them with the gun the first time they came. Leave me alone.
I'm aspiring to be like the two ladies.
Oh, you're aspiring to get
there. Yeah, so I'm not there yet. All right, you want to hear some tales of extreme heat at the UPS warehouse?
Let's go. Go ahead, do it.
All right, well I'll give you one of each. All right, so...
What do you mean just one of each?
We actually... So some of my coworkers, we actually fried an egg on the metal rails of a conveyor belt one time. It was so hot in the building. And I remember, okay, like the entrance door, I remember watching people. This was like the first 2 years that I worked at the company, and I didn't think I was going to make it because the first couple of summers were pretty rough. I remember watching people walk no more than maybe 20 paces inside the building, and they were already dripping sweat.
Yeah, that happens at our place, too.
Soaked. So... I mean, thermometer wise, I gotta say it was in excess of 120 degrees probably in the building. On the other side of the coin, more recently, in December of 2022, I don't know if you remember this, Jimbo, but it was about 2 days before Christmas. It was like 30 below wind chill, and it was rainy and an ice storm. Mm-hmm. This is Indiana, like the weather changes like nothing. And then the next day, it was like 30 below. The wind was blowing at like 50 miles an hour. And one of the main heaters broke in the building. And there was actually ice forming on the insides of the overhead doors in the building and on the windows and so forth. That was one of the coldest days that I remember. I had like a shirt, a thermal, a hoodie, a vest, an overcoat, three hats, and gloves. And I was still like freezing cold. And even moving around, that was like... the coldest.
I suppose you just say, I'm just going home.
Yeah. But in both cases, I thought death was imminent.
Which one would you take over that?
Hot or cold?
In I'd take condition.
Cold. Yeah. I'd rather have it be too cold. I can try to find ways to warm up.
What I always hated is when you're working in the cold and then you go into the break room or something for break or lunch or something, you come back out. It's just worse. You know, your pores open back up and it just freezes all over again.
Yeah, I don't know how people take the heat. There are guys, coworkers, that they're able to handle the heat. They don't mind it. I'm the complete opposite. I cannot handle the heat. So midnight sun would do me in for sure. And with that, I am finished.
What are you ranking this, Eric?
I'm going to rate it. I'm going to give it a notch above you. I'm probably going to give it at least a 7.5. 7.75 maybe. Prop piece. I'm taking the sweaty sport coat. No, just
the kidding. Ascot or whatever you want to run.
I'm not taking the sport. I'll take the Zenith radio. I'll take that.
Look at this guy.
Yeah, I'll take that.
So there you have it. It's just an average episode, I would say. I think next time we record, I can't remember the name of the episode, but I think it's the one where the guy has the voodoo thing for the Civil War or whatever, where you can freeze people or whatever. So,
not good.
We'll see how that turns out. So, you know where to reach us on the social medias. We are the Tragedy of Cinema Podcast. Look for us wherever you can find us. With that being said, I think this episode's coming to a close.
And cut.
The poles of fear, the extremes of how the Earth might conceivably be doomed. Minor exercise in the care and feeding of a nightmare. Respectfully submitted by all the thermometer watchers in the Twilight Zone.